Jacksonville leader takes a step up in the Florida legislature. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and just ahead, a conversation with new Senate Democratic leader Audrey Gibson. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, how you can support WJCT this Giving Tuesday. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, Jacksonville's own Audrey Gibson is assuming a prominent role in the Florida legislature. As Senate Democrats last week selected Gibson in a ceremony in Tallahassee as their leader for the next two legislative sessions. Gibson is only the third woman to serve in the position and only the second African-American woman to do so. So how will she approach this job in a Republican-dominated body? She's going to tell us right now as Senator Audrey Gibson joins us in studio and takes your calls. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me this morning. And frosty morning.
Yeah, that's right. And lots of comments on our Facebook page already for Senator Audrey Gibson. What are your questions for her? As she will be working with Senate President Bill Galvano, a Republican, to lead the Florida Senate. Give us a call with your comments and questions at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect at wjct.org, tweets to at Melissa in Jax. And first of all, congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. It's very exciting.
Yes, very exciting. And now you've served in Tallahassee now for, gosh, it's been almost a decade. And so done a lot of shoe leather. You've chaired the Military and Veterans Affairs Space and Domestic Security Committee. You ascended to the Senate after first serving in the House.
Yes.
At the start of the new millennium. And so as you assume this role, you've said some of your priorities include raising teacher pay, transportation, economic development, along with expanding access to health care. Those the first and last in particular, teacher salaries and health care access tend to be Democratic priorities. What's your approach to pushing this agenda in a body where Republicans hold 23 of Florida's 40 Senate seats?
Well, first of all, I was certainly elected in 2002 to the House and elected in the Senate in a special in 2011, and I'm so honored to serve. And frankly, I've been in the minority since I started in 2002, so I know what that is like.
Mm-hmm.
I know what a super minority position is like, and I know what getting closer to the middle is like. And I think that is where we are in the Senate, which is a whole different body, if you will, as with 40 individuals, there's a little more camaraderie.
More collegial.
More collegial. Yes,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah, well, that's good.
And so
you hope to work with Senate President Galvano and someone you've had a rapport with over the years.
Yes, we actually started together in the House, and we've been talking almost every day since the election was over. Even before the election, we talked to each other before Election Day saying, okay, well, all the best to you, all the best to you. In terms of how the outcome would be,
mm-hmm.
Because we had a number of targeted seats. And so, but to your question, we are at least now 17, which is closer to a 2020 split. So that makes us extremely relevant as Democrats in the Senate. And generally, you're more relevant because with only 40 members, every single vote counts, right?
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to having the conversations, which include raising teacher pay. And as I mentioned in my comments in the on the night I was elected, there's no reason that we should be bashing teachers. There's no reason that we should call our children failures nor our school failure factories, because it's clear that those schools didn't fail anyone in the process. And so getting teacher salary when we know that it's one of the lowest in the country, should not be that heavy of a lift. And so the mechanics of it will be how we will be able to bridge where they should be and where they are now. And it may take more than one or two budget cycles, hopefully not more than two.
And in terms of another big priority for you, expanding access to health care, this state declined to expand Medicaid to low-income Floridians. And so what is your approach as the Democratic leader in the Senate on health care access, well, as the new session will begin?
We still have to raise the issue. If you let it drop, you never will get there. You'll never find a place of compromise. You'll never try to put together at least some measure of coverage for the nearly million people who don't have health insurance. And you mentioned earlier about who's in control in terms of the Republican governor and the legislature. But if you look at the numbers in this past election, and health care was on the top of everybody's mind in the state of Florida, the outcome is not a mandate. When you talk about what 30,000 votes difference or 25, whatever that governor number was, it's very close given the number of people in this state. So it's not a mandate. And I believe that we have to raise all voices and understand that people want to make sure that they have health care coverage in place so they don't go bankrupt. And if all employers are not going to offer health care packages for their employees, or there's going to be less 40-hour work week so you don't get it anyway, we have an obligation to help structure health care plans or coverage for these individuals.
Okay, and let's go to some calls now for Senator Audrey Gibson. She becomes the leader of the Democrats in Tallahassee. What are your thoughts and comments and questions? 549-2937. Give us a call. Ricky is on the north side. Hi, Ricky. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, thank you for having me on the show. I wanted to ask Senator Gibson about, I had an opportunity to have a conversation with her on climate change when she had an event on Pearl Street. And when I asked her about climate change, she said she didn't have a decision yet because she said the science wasn't in. So my question is, what do you mean the science is not in? There's tons of it, especially the report that's just been out.
Okay.
So I want to know what your take is on that, ma'am. Thank you.
Sure. And he's talking about the recent federal climate assessment that was released on Black Friday. Really dire predictions about how climate change and sea level rise will affect this country, particularly Florida, with all of our coastal property. And so we have not seen strong leadership from the legislature, which admittedly is a Republican-dominated legislature and less likely to be aggressive on this in the last couple of decades, frankly. As you go back to Tallahassee, do you expect climate change and mitigation around climate to be discussed at all among your colleagues? And what are your thoughts about how the state's governmental leadership should be addressing it?
Well, first, let me say I did not have any meeting on climate change.
He must be confusing you with someone else.
I think so.
Yeah,
because I'm very much a believer in climate change. It's evident to us every day and every season. And so there has not been any embrace of climate change by the legislature whatsoever.
Which you're not happy about.
No. And if people understand, let's use beach renourishment as an example, right? So we see that the water is coming more and more inland. And we spend millions of dollars on sand to renourish the beach without even addressing the fact as to why this whole issue is happening. And so I think in order to raise it, it would have to definitely come from my caucus, the Democrat caucus. The question is, what does that legislation look like? What would legislation look like? Or at least a resolution. We could do a resolution, but it doesn't really change anything. It's not binding at all. It just says, this is what we believe, and these are some things that we should investigate. Now, whether it would pass is something else.
Sure. Yesterday on this program, we spoke to a journalist from Climate Central about the report and what Florida can expect. And we were asked by listeners when Jacksonville will develop a climate action plan to deal with the expected impacts of climate change. Is that something that the legislature and your colleagues could propose, a bill that would lay out the provisions of a climate action plan for the state of Florida?
Likely not. However, one of the ways to bring the issue probably more to the forefront is through an OPAGA study, which is we do in the legislature sometimes when there's usually going to be some legislation to follow, or it's for information for future reference on how we want to proceed with certain issues. And so that study could be requested. Obviously, it still has to go through the chain of command through the
Senate
President's
office. But you're in the chain of command now, right?
I didn't quite make it to the presidency like
I
wanted to.
That's true.
But I do, that relationship is still there. Requesting it, an OPAGA study, is something that I could do. A member of my caucus, I'm sure, would be willing to do. The issue is whether or not action would follow based on the information that they come up with. So the premise could be this: the information that you talked about that came on Black Friday, and what actions, if any, we should take as a state, not as a local, but as a state, and what does that look like from a legislative perspective?
Sure. I mean, I would think that as the years go by, the pressure on Tallahassee on this issue is only going to increase, particularly as coastal properties become virtually uninsurable.
Exactly.
And the cost of inaction and delay will end up costing the state a whole lot more in the long run. And so that's something we can come back to. But in the meantime, let's go to some more calls for State Senator Audrey Gibson. Bob in Green Cove Springs. Hi, Bob. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. And thank you all very much for the informative discussion this morning. My question to the senator is, I had shared that I'm really glad that y'all are looking at health care because it remains such an issue, but I was wondering about the cost seems to be an underlying factor. I have friends who are paying over $20,000 a year for a family coverage with a $7,500 deductible. So that tells me that cost is really a thing that maybe we're not able to get at yet. I was wondering if the center could share thoughts on that.
Thanks, Bob.
I think in terms of cost, that is, of course, largely through what the insurance companies are offering. I'm not sure if you're talking about ACA policies or just policies of people who have coverage at work. And one of the ways to help reduce costs, and I'm not an insurance agent or anything like that, it's the risk pool, which really determines what policies and costs are going to look like. And so it's about who's in the group, and what are the risks, if you will, of a claim. So it's really a statistical issue, but the more people we put in the pool who are healthy, and you have this mix, and then you can come up with a rate that people could likely afford. And in terms of the deductibles, it's how that particular family decides what they think their risk of needing certain coverage is going to be as well. And so it's not a, it's not rocket science much, but it takes coming to the table to figure out all the pieces in order to be able to help cover more and more people.
549-2937. Eric is in Arlington. Hi, Eric. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I was going to ask another question, but something else occurred to me, if you don't mind. During the 2018 midterm elections, the Republican Party and Donald Trump made the election about Trump. And sort of as a tactical matter, I don't understand why the Democratic Party doesn't put on the gloves and get in the ring with these people. And say, look, you know, Donald Trump, according to his own admissions, is a proud misogynist. The Republican Party continued to support Roy Moore, even though he was a pedophile, in the race for the governorship. And then Trump nominated a rapist, a most likely rapist, for the Supreme Court. The Republican Party is the party of rape.
He was accused of sexually assaulting Christine Blasey Ford. Yes, not raping her vaginally, but yes, go ahead.
Among many others, there were other women that came forward. There are who knows how many didn't come forward. Roy Moore admitted he took out, when he was in his 30s, took girls on dates, I guess. When they were 14, and then admitted that he also further said, well, I always ask their parents. You know, and then, of course, there's Trump's famous tape and his behavior. He raped his wife. When he ran the Miss America pageant.
And I get your point, Eric. I mean, I think the president's pattern of misogyny and offensive remarks about women and credible accusations
party.
Of sexual assault. That's
him.
All
it's
in the record.
Party.
And so are you saying then that Democrats should be more aggressive in tying local Republicans to the president and his record on these issues?
The Republican Party is the party of rape. That's what the scientists say. I mean, this is the way the Republicans play ball. The Democrats are always nice and polite, and they're not willing to get bloody. Well, it's about time somebody's knuckles got bloodied. It's about time we got in and started mixing it up with these people, because right now.
Well,
and Eric, I appreciate the call.
Yes,
Audrey
you.
Gibson, are Democrats too nice and too wimpy? And not willing to get into street fights with Republicans, whether it's in Tallahassee or in Washington?
Well, I don't know about the street fight, but I wouldn't call it too nice. I'm trying to merge all of those things together. And let's just take Duval for an example. Democrats turned out in Duval, right? We actually elected Andrew Gillum.
Yeah, in Duval County, Democrats won up and down the ballot. That
exactly,
is true.
Exactly. So it's we are extremely aggressive. We're still grassroots.
I think what he's saying,
we're
though,
pushing
is,
people.
I
and
think,
so the issue is turnout.
But I think what he's saying is he would like to see more aggressive rhetoric from the Democratic Party in defining the Republican Party. And you sounds like you disagree with that.
Well, I think based on all of the things that the state party put out, the news releases, the calls that we had, the commercials, if you will, that were done even by the candidates, that we did define who those Republican candidates were. And I think we did a very good job of it. It's who showed up at the polls. And I wish I wish you could see the visual of the map, even in the seats that we were targeting, where the polling numbers were up and down. The Democrat candidate was up, and then they were even. But on election day, Republicans turned out. And so what it gets to be about is not even the rhetoric. It's about people's loyalty. And they're moved. They were moved, I believe, because of fear, but there's also, I'm an R, I don't care what they say about Trump or DeSantis or anybody. I've been an R, I'm going to be an R. There's a certain age group that drives, and if you have the data, you'll see it, that drives that R.
Particularly in off-year elections, older white Florida voters tend to turn out at higher numbers. And we saw that again this time, even though
the rural counties, even the panhandle was hit by a storm. And we register people, but they have to turn out.
Okay.
Period.
And let's go to some comments on our Facebook page now for new Senate Democratic leader, Audrey Gibson. Gary writes, can you save Florida's environment and our fresh water supply? We need to conserve more land and stop the depletion of the aquifer. Here's a comment from Susan. How can we prevent poor ballot designs? Florida needs new voting machines. Talking about all the issues with the election. And here is one more from Chris. Will this new legislative session finally tackle the lack of accountability in charters and voucher schools and poor teacher pay? Lots of questions for you from your constituents out there.
Absolutely. Let me start with the last one first.
Okay. And he writes he wants more accountability over charter and voucher schools and a pay raise for teachers, which is one of your big issues.
Yes, the pay raise earlier, the charters, the accountability, I cannot agree with you more. It needs to be there. That will have to be an issue that is, again, raised by the Dem caucus, period. We have, unfortunately, the Dem candidate did not win the election down in South Florida, and the individual who did get elected is a charter school, a big charter school individual who gets paid by charter schools. And he's now chair of the Ed Approps or the policy committee. I'm not sure which. I don't remember which. I have that here. So it's an issue that we have to deal with, and we have to raise it regardless of whether we think we're going to run into a brick wall or not, and try to get at least down that road, because it is a serious issue. And that's not about choice. It's all about people who, I believe, if you decide that you want a charter, then you should bring your money to the table. I know the school districts grant them or not, but if you decide that you want to run your own school, that means that you have the capacity to do that. And we should not be funding institutions, if you will, that last for a limited amount of time and have received millions of dollars of taxpayer dollars. So that definitely has to be dealt with.
Okay. And lots of comments on Facebook for you. What about clean water, environmental issues?
Environmental issues, that means that we are going to have to look back at some of those things that Rick Scott and his administration through rule have ripped away those from the rules and reinstitute those policies that make and keep our waterways clean. Toxic dumping and those kinds of things.
Red tide, green algae, yeah.
And underground tanks that were inspected more locally, and we took and regionalized that, so we have less inspectors over the years. These are things that definitely need to be revisited in the next 2 years.
Okay, and before we let you go, economic development is also on your agenda. Can you share a little bit about that?
And for me, that points more to, you know, we've incentivized larger corporations over the years under the Scott administration. And I believe that we need to do a better job of helping small business particularly in the micro lending area, which they wouldn't hear my bill last session, but we can make smaller loans to small businesses who recycle money into their local communities. And that is how we get good economic and neighborhood development. And I think that is a critical issue that I want to make sure that we're focusing on, and to include some of our rural counties. I think maybe we can win some more Democrats in those rural counties if we focus on their needs as well. It's something that we need to embrace as a caucus and as a party, because a lot of the rural areas, which were largely farming back in the day, are suffering, and many of those people are living in poverty. So we have to, and it's something I raised in my address to our caucus, and that is looking at rural economic development. I think one of the issues would be is it convincing some of them that a lifestyle change, building into those areas and making them destinations for tourism will help them in the long run.
Interesting. Well, you head back to Tallahassee when?
On the 11th, we start committee that week. And so now we're just all gearing up. The committees came out, committee assignments came out yesterday, and the structure, the meeting dates will come into place, and we'll get ready to rock and roll.
Well, off and running, and enjoy the holidays in the interim. And thank you so much for joining us with your thoughts. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, and thank you to all your listeners.
Yes, thank you, Senator Audrey Gibson, and much more still ahead. Later on the show, it's Giving Tuesday. Yeah, today. And one local nonprofit you can support is us, WJCT. We'll tell you how. But up next...
We were actually scoffed at by friends and family who said, what do you think you're doing coming to Jacksonville bringing organic food?
Our movable feast drops in on a trailblazer, grocery chain Native Son. We'll be right back.
WJCT, this Giving Tuesday. Tell the world that you believe in public media and trust us to bring the best in news, arts, education, and inspiring programming to the First Coast. Visit wjct.org/give.
Do you have a story to tell? Since 2003, StoryCorps has been collecting and archiving stories from all over the country. From November 18th to December 21st, StoryCorps will be right here in Jacksonville. StoryCorps is the two-time Peabody Award-winning nonprofit whose mission is to preserve and share humanity's stories. If you've ever listened to their NPR program, you know how powerful and touching these stories can be. To have StoryCorps record your story, make your reservation today at wjct.org/events.
Welcome back. Well, for decades now, he's been a local trailblazer in bringing fresh organic food to Jacksonville. In today's Movable Feast, our look at dining and culinary trends around town, Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance speaks with Erin Gottlieb of Native Son.
Have a Welcome, Aaron Gottlieb, the founder and the guru behind Native Sun in Jacksonville. And so many people call you a lifestyle center. Tell us, what is Native Sun, and give us a backstory.
Well, first, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. You know, Native Sun had a mission originally, and it was to bring organic food to every table that we could in our community, and a wish and a desire to have access to chemical-free food around the country. So we started as a natural grocery store that had extreme standards that was there to protect the consumer. You can always go to a regular grocery store and find food to eat, but food that's going to actually improve your life and do good things for you in terms of your overall health and your family and your well-being, we didn't feel like that's what grocery store's mission was to do. It was to give people access to food, not to clean food.
And how long ago was that that you had the vision and opened your first Native Sun? Because I know you have multiple locations.
Yeah, it was 22 years ago is when we started incorporating the company, and we opened in 1997. So
for Jacksonville, that is innovative.
It is. We were actually scoffed at by friends and family who said, what do you think you're doing coming to Jacksonville bringing organic food? They laughed about it. And funny enough, my wife and I had been going to college at Emory University for anthropology, and I was working in natural foods up there. And we still were driving to Atlanta to go to the farmers markets to pick up organic food once a month to fill our pantries at home because we didn't have any access down here. So I knew it was ahead of its time for the city, but I knew it was the right time to start introducing people to it. And if you look at Jacksonville today, it certainly has exploded in options and food.
Well, I love the name Native Sun. Mm-hmm. And what's the story about Native Sun?
Well, so, you know, Native Sun was really native is I'm from Jacksonville before the word local was a big term in terms of food and how
perfect.
People viewed it. So I go, I'm moving back home from Atlanta. So native is moving home. And then Sun was S-O-N, because my father was a businessman in the Jacksonville community. And I go, you know, I'm going back to my family. And so it was Native S-O-N. And I go, doesn't resonate to me moving back to Florida to start a company. So we obviously made it more a yes, just because of the Florida roots.
Walk our listeners through a Native Sun store.
Okay. So one of the big differences between us is we've made drawn a line in the sand for standards. So when you walk in, the perimeter of our store is really what I call, for most people who think of health food, they think of fresh food.
Yes.
And we also know the perimeter of the store is where you find less processed foods. But in our store, there's less choices to make because we've only given you what we believe you've came in to purchase, which is all organic produce. You come in and you're not having to pick that up, read signs, figure out if a customer moves something into the wrong place.
You don't have to wade through other things.
Absolutely.
When you walk in, you're right in the experience.
Correct. So we're moving into the digital expansion world right now, and I'm working on a program for the community to be able to access questions and education and nutrition and be able to get it online and get it served to your house because we know that that'll save time. And after that is complete, we will then be moving into, I know we're looking at St. John's County and some of the older areas of St. John's County. Mm-hmm. And I know that we're looking as far as the San Marco, Riverside, Avondale area. Just we're looking for communities that are really, they don't necessarily meet what you would expect a normal grocery store to look for. Again, it's the beach model where we're looking at communities that share and walk and have centerpieces of food being where people gather around.
Aaron Gottlieb, Native Sun, thank you. Thank you so much for being with me, and I hope lots of people learn that it's easy to think and be healthy when they're shopping and wanting new experiences and educating too. So thank you. We'll be looking for you at Native Sun.
Thank you for your kind words,
if
and thank you for having me.
When they come to mind.
Thank you so much, Lee. Well, here's a holiday tradition you really need to take your kids to see. It's Gingerbread Extravaganza, an amazing confection creation that's a holiday favorite, and it's about to open at the Jacksonville Historical Society right across the street from Veterans Memorial Arena on A. Philip Randolph Boulevard. Alan Bliss, Executive Director of the Jacksonville Historical Society, is here now to tell us more. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa, and good morning to all the listeners who are members and friends of the Jacksonville Historical Society and all the Jacksonvillians who are gingerbread house enthusiasts.
Gingerbread house enthusiasts. Yeah, that's a thing. I didn't realize what a big thing this is until I learned of your tradition several years ago. But this gingerbread extravaganza has been named one of the South's best holiday experiences because it's so fantastical. And for people that have never been to visit you at the Historical Society, this is the perfect opportunity to do that, because what you do every year with these huge gingerbread house creations is nothing short of amazing. These are really intricate, elaborate designs. And this year you have a special theme, it looks like, Alan. These are gingerbread homes in the design of local landmarks. Is that what you're doing this time?
The theme this year is Jacksonville history, but also Christmas. And you're right, we have had builders who craft their gingerbread designs to evoke historic buildings in Jacksonville, significant landmarks and places. It never fails to amaze me, the creativity and the inspiration that people bring to these creations. And there are examples of houses from past years that have been preserved. And some of the stars will be exhibited at an honor walk display at the front of the church sanctuary with some of the notable houses from previous years.
Very nice. And this is all kicking off Friday. Is that right, this Friday?
Thursday,
November 29th.
Yes, this Thursday is the first day, and we will be running through the rest of this month and through December. And for the first time this year, we'll be open for 3 days after Christmas. So Jacksonville residents who have friends and family who are visiting from out of town will, for the first time, be able to include them in something that is really a distinctive Jacksonville experience.
Now, this is only $10 for adults, $3 for kids. And this is an easy way for everyone, really, to get into the holiday spirit and support a vital institution, the Historical Society. You preserve the history of this city.
Yes, we do. No one else does what the Jacksonville Historical Society does, and this is the principal event of the year.
This is your big event. Yeah.
This is it. We have a very generous core of underwriters and sponsors, highlighted by the Dolores Barr Weaver Forever Fund. We have regular annual support from that organization, a number of other local foundations and businesses, and very generous donors. We appreciate their underwriting and sponsorship. That's a part of how the fundraising actually helps sustain the Historical Society.
That's right. But people can do their part by visiting Gingerbread Extravaganza at the Historical Society in the old St. Andrew's Church across the street from the arena, starting Thursday and running through December 28th. So make a point of visiting, because believe me, you'll be amazed at how beautiful this is. Alan Bliss, Executive Director of JHS, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and I can't wait to see these myself. Thanks for stopping by.
Likewise to you, Melissa. See you at the Gingerbread Extravaganza.
And we'll be right back.
Jaguar season on a high note. Treat yourself to a live jazz brunch on Sunday, December 16th from 10 a.m. to kickoff at WJCT Studios. Enjoy live music by Jaguar Jazz featuring saxophonist Tracy Morris and an eclectic brunch menu curated by celebrity chef Cartel. Quench your pregame thirst with the Mimosa Fountain or select your own libation at the Cash Bar. For tickets and group seating, visit 904tix.com and search Jazz Brunch.
WJCT and Vistar Credit Union are honoring the memory of Fred Rogers with the 16th annual Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used sweaters, jackets, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped off at WJCT and all Vistar Credit Union branches, Two Men in a Truck, and the Tom Bush family of dealerships. For more information, log on to WJCT.org. Contributions will be donated to selected nonprofit facilities within the First Coast area.
Welcome back. Well, award-winning artists from around the world are coming to town this holiday season as local nonprofit Don't Miss a Beat presents Art in the Park. It's a jazz concert featuring jazz great Eric Carter happening this Friday. And this is a whole series, by the way. Felicia Bass is Director of Operations for Don't Miss a Beat. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. And so this is exciting because thanks to an Arts Alive grant from PNC Bank, Don't Miss a Beat is putting on an amazing concert series. Tell me about it.
Absolutely. Well, Don't Miss a Beat is in its 10th year, so we're really excited about that. But we're super excited about this new concert series sponsored by PNC Bank. This was something that our artistic director, Ulysses Owens Jr., who is a local, has been dreaming about for a while. And so to have the opportunity to bring arts activities to the community, especially to those who would not be able to actually afford it or participate in the arts, is very exciting, not only for him, but for the Don't Miss a Beat organization.
Don't Miss a Beat brings the arts to kids, brings music, brings culture, and it's one of the best nonprofits in this city. And so everyone should come out and support you. Because not only is it a great cause, it's going to be a great concert with Eric Carter. This is going to be an amazing show.
Yeah, we're really excited about this. And again, this is free to the public. So folks are, you know, we're encouraging folks to come out and to really enjoy this. And not only to hear Eric Carter, but also to participate in some of the local activities that we have going on. Some of the vendors that will be there as well to sell some of their items, to get to know the community more, and just to engage with the people and let the community know that we're here to stay, but also to just offer these activities to you all. So we really want people to come out and enjoy themselves this Friday.
Okay, and this is coming up Friday. It's Art in the Park, sponsored by PNC Bank. It's the Don't Miss a Beat concert series kicking off, and let's tell everyone where they need to go to access this free music.
So this is going to be at our Community Arts Center at 2839 West Beaver Street. That is at the Woodstock Park Community Center. Again, it's free to the public. We encourage you all to come on out, enjoy yourselves, and enjoy a great evening of jazz.
It's a great evening of jazz, and it's Friday night. You can learn more, by the way, at the website don'tmissabeat.org. Thanks so much for joining us, Felicia Bass, Director of Operations for Don't Miss a Beat. Again, that concert is Friday, and it's free, and it's the first of a series, so it's going to be amazing. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
In a moment, how you can support WJCT on this Giving Tuesday.
Join WJCT and AARP for a community-wide Shred It Day, Saturday, December 1st, 9 a.m. till noon, located at WJCT 100 Festival Park Avenue. For more info, go to wjct.org/events.
WJCT is seeking creative, innovative, and informative sessions for our Teach Conference on Saturday, March 2nd. Presenters have the opportunity to connect with educators from across the First Coast. Go to wjct.org/teach.
End the 2018 Jaguar season on a high note. Treat yourself to a live jazz brunch on Sunday, December 16th, from 10 a.m. to kickoff at WJCT Studios. Enjoy live music by Jaguar Jazz featuring saxophonist Tracy Morris and an eclectic brunch menu curated by celebrity chef Cartel. Quench your pregame thirst with the Mimosa Fountain or select your own libation at the Cash Bar. For tickets and group seating, visit 904tix.com and search Jazz Brunch.
On the next Fresh Air, as Nancy Pelosi corrals votes to try to once again become Speaker of the House, we talk with journalist Robert Draper about why she became the Republicans' favorite target in the midterms, the challenges she faces within her own party, and how she plans to deal with President Trump. Draper writes about her in the New York Times Magazine. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Keepsakes, mementos, prized possessions, they bring joy, magic, and meaning to our chaotic lives. And they are among the few things we grab when disaster strikes. What object do you hold most dear? The physical and emotional value of the things we keep. Next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it is that time of year where we all stop and take a moment to give back. Yes, today is the day. Giving Tuesday is here. And if you go to the hashtag Giving Tuesday on social media, you'll see that millions of people have been brought together of all backgrounds, trying to make a difference in their neighborhood. It's a global movement for good. You can be part of it right here in our neighborhood, Jacksonville, by joining in to the spirit of Giving Tuesday, where you support a nonprofit cause that you care about, by donating to us, WJCT. Yes, we are a nonprofit organization. WJCT CEO David McGowan is here now with more on this Giving Tuesday. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Delighted to be here.
Thanks for being with us. And, you know, when we host a lot of nonprofit groups on this program, we try to support them where we can and get people to support the nonprofit community in Jacksonville. But I thought it was important today on Giving Tuesday to kind of shout out for ourselves because we're a nonprofit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure that many of our listeners had the same experience that you and I probably had this morning. What is, we woke up, we checked our phones, and oh my goodness, loads and loads of emails from every organization that we even thought about giving to at some point in our past told us that today was Giving Tuesday. And I thought it was actually worth taking a moment just to remember the origins of Giving Tuesday, because Giving Tuesday comes fast on the heels of Black Friday and Cyber Monday. And actually, it was founded not that long ago, back in 2013, by two interesting groups, by the 92nd Street Y in New York City, the United Nations Foundation, in order really to provide a balance to those very kind of commercial days that have sprung up over the years. And it's really a day when we are asked to think about something else besides the commercial nature of the holidays and about the opportunity to give thanks and to support a range of groups that are important to us. And so what we ask you to do, our listeners, on this day is to think about WJCT in that context. If we're important to you, we ask that you consider us along with the many other worthy groups that are asking for your support today on Giving Tuesday.
Yes. If you go to our website, wjct.org, in the top right-hand corner, you'll see a little red rectangle that says Donate Now. All you have to do is click on it, and you can be part of Giving Tuesday. There's a few other little icons on our website with Sesame Street characters letting you know about Giving Tuesday as well. And if you support us, here's what you're supporting. Not only are you supporting this program, First Coast Connect, and every show you hear on the radio, you support all of our PBS programs. You support our radio reading service, our Mr. Rogers Neighborhood Sweater Drive, WJCT PBS Kids, and all of that educational programming. You support a whole range of community events that we put on here at the station for a vast array of important local groups and organizations. And so you're supporting not only great programming on the radio and on television and online, you're supporting a community stakeholder, which is us, WJCT. And if you've donated before during pledge drives, we thank you. But we can always use a little end of year support.
That's
right. And today's the day.
Yes, and you could think of it like a little bit of a mini pledge drive here for a few minutes on this Giving Tuesday. We know people don't really like pledge drives and interrupting programming, and as you may know, we have really tried to limit that. Last pledge drive, we ran a program called Radio Uninterrupted, where we spent several days really only asking for your support during what were usually used for promotional breaks and not interrupting programming. So we're trying to do that as much as possible. And you can really help us to move away from that those massive program interruptions, which we call pledge drives, by simply going right now to WJCT.org and looking for that donate button. The other thing that you can do, and I just want to mention this, in the midst of the holiday season, as we all do a lot of our shopping online, and indeed we do use Amazon to do that sometimes, there is a service that Amazon offers called Amazon Smile, which allows you to actually register WJCT as a designated charity, and Amazon will actually contribute a very small percentage of sales to us if you do that. And if you shop through Amazon Smile, it's very easy to do. And I know we missed Cyber Monday, so maybe some of you have already done all of your online shopping, but I'm guessing that there's more to do. And so that's another opportunity. It doesn't cost you anything to support WJCT in that way. So if you're online and shopping on Amazon, just search for Smile and you can designate WJCT right there.
That's an easy way to support us, and you won't even notice that you've done it. So that's a good suggestion, too. Again, it's Giving Tuesday, a global day dedicated to giving back. Make WJCT your choice on Giving Tuesday, as David said. Just go to WJCT.org, click the donate button in the top right corner, and make a tax-deductible donation to public media, keeping us strong and vibrant for years and years to come here on the First Coast. Our CEO, David McGowan, he took some time out of a meeting to come appear on the radio. So thank you for that.
My pleasure.
And spreading the word. I'll let you get back to your busy schedule and we'll wrap up this show. Thanks for listening, everyone. Our director is Michelle Corum. Our show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Shevchuk. And if you missed anything this morning, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 p.m. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is 89.9. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Again, it's Giving Tuesday. Donate to WJCT.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.